Calvin. I'd like to inform all parties the call is being recorded. Any objections to disconnect? Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you very much. Could we have a roll call?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. Apologies for the inconvenience with meeting view. On today's call we have Michaela Nalon, Alan Greenberg, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Sergei Gorbunov, James Bladell, Tim Ruiz, Paul Diaz, Jeff Eckhouse, Michael Young, Elaine Doolin, Ted Suzuki, Tatiana Kromtsova, and from staff we have Glenda Saint-Giry, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies if there's anyone else from staff. I'm not with meeting view currently.
I think Marika's here.
Yeah. And Marika Cummings.
I'm here.
Sorry, Marika. Apologies, we have Barry Cobb and Mason Cole. And please remind everyone to say their names when they speak for transcript purposes. Thank you.
Thank you, Gisela. I had an echo when you were talking. Is it okay for the rest of us now? Anyone else hear echoes? No?
Fine.
Okay. The first item is a review of the agenda, and I did ask Marika to flip two items, or to at least to move an item, that is to move the status update on the survey up to the first item, because I believe knowing what the current status of that is may well help us in deciding what we do in Seoul. Are there any problems with doing that, and any other requests for changes in agenda? Hearing none, could we have a status update on the survey?
Yes, this is Marika. So I've started doing the research, starting off with printing all the information I could possibly find on the internet on the different registrar websites. So far, I've managed to cover the first four registrars on the top 10 list. I think I've been, on average, been able to find like 50% of the information in the information available online. And for the other 50%, I've reached out to the different contacts, some of which are part of this group, to help me find the other information. From two of those, I have already received feedback. I'm still waiting for feedback from the other two who've indicated that they're working on it, and we'll get back shortly. And I'll continue working down the list leading up to Seoul.
So is it fair to say that within the next few days we might be able to summarize the answers to the questions for those four top registrars, just to get a feeling for what is happening in the real world?
If the two outstanding are able to provide me with their feedback in the next couple of days, and that goes to James and Jeff,
this is Jeff. I can respond to that. Marika, you're just. I was out of town last week, so I responded with Marika that I'd look at it this week. I should have it done by, I'd say tomorrow, end of day here. I'm on the Pacific Coast. Most of the responses that you had put in were pretty on point. There were just some of the additional questions that we just needed to respond to. But I would say tomorrow, end of day for ours.
And this is James. I should have it done relatively shortly. I'm targeting the end of this week, but I want to make sure I give it an opportunity for Tim to review it as well.
Okay. So that sounds good. So we will have, by the way, in terms of for GoDaddy, is that covered? Are you trying to cover your resellers, or are you looking mainly at your direct business? Or did the two map to the same for the answer questions we're looking at?
I think it depends on the question somewhat, Alan. I think if you're, if the question is targeting a retail environment, then we'll probably respond, using our experience with GoDaddy. But if it starts to ask questions about resellers, we'll probably put on our, a different hat. But I think you can consider it a response on behalf of the family of registrars.
Okay.
That we have.
Yeah, no, I was asking.
I'll let Tim, of course, correct me if I'm off base on that. But
no, I think that sounds correct.
Yeah, no, I was asking because I know in the case of some of the discussions we've had, you said that it's really the registrar's responsibility to take the action, not the reseller. So in that case, the answers would be uniform. We're talking about notices and things like that. In other cases, clearly, it may not. All right. So we will have a good image of at least some of the characteristics that registrants see, mapping to a large percentage of the total registrants, maybe a majority, maybe not, but certainly a large number, which we can use to illustrate some of the characteristics, some of the patterns that are seen. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the soul meeting.
Alan.
Yes, sorry.
Can I just ask one more question?
Yes, sir.
So when I've gathered all the information on the four registrars, would you just like me to share it as is in Excel format, you know, with all the information there? Would you like me to prepare a kind of summary that, you know, stays neutral on names and, you know, who said what, and trying to give more to see if there's a general trend or not, or how would you like me to present
information? Well, certainly from my point of view, I would like to see the raw data because I think with only four to look at, it's not going to be hard to summarize them just optically by looking at them, and we'll give a better picture regarding how uniform they are. But I'm willing to hear thoughts from other people. Paul?
Thanks, Alan. I just, you know, we pushed hard to get it in quickly, but I was always operating on the assumption, A, that all these will be anonymized, that it's,
okay.
Yeah, you may optically think you can figure out who it is, that's fine, but I don't want to see anything coming out, published papers by this group or whatnot, that could clearly link us. I also think it's dangerous to start taking things in piecemeal and would prefer to see, at least the first four groups responding and then, you know, some form of summary or whatnot. I think, if you start looking at what one says and then what the other one says, more than anything, we're probably just going to start, you know, chasing down particular things that may not apply to all. I would counsel to wait until the first four are in and then roll them up again anonymously, though.
Okay, I can certainly live with that. James?
Yes, I just wanted to echo and agree with what Paul was saying, as well as offer a suggestion that we possibly have Marika anonymize them before bringing them back to the group, since our transcripts and wikis and things like that are public. Just want to make sure that there's not an inadvertent leak of the information that Paul's talking about.
No, I'm assuming that our mailing lists and things like that are public, so anything distributed to the group as a whole certainly would be public, and we have to honor that. Marika, your hand's back up.
Yeah. No, so I just want to ask a question to make sure, because I want to, you know, make sure that there are no concerns and I'm not sending anything out that, you know, people don't want to see there. So would people be happy then if I, you know, take off the name at the top of the registrars identified, like hustle them up, you know, take out if there are, I already have been careful in not, and you know, talking about registrar and not putting in the name of the actual registrar in the language. Are people happy to share that? I'll, of course, take out, because now I've included as well all the reference materials that I've used for the research. So I would take that information out as well. Are those on the call, you know, James, Paul, are you happy with that information being shared? Because, of course, some of the, you know, the language will be able, you know, people, it's not too difficult to trace it back, because some of these text comes straight out of registration agreements or some part of websites. So, you know, if someone puts a little bit of research on it, of course, won't take too much effort to, you know, put two and two together. Is that sufficient for you, or are you more comfortable if, you know, I do what I just said and send it to you, so you just check whether, you know, you're happy with it as is going out on a mailing list?
Yeah, this is James. I'll respond. I think that, you know, we want definitely company/registrar names removed, any identifiers such as address or IANA number, but also be careful with if any footnotes or URLs reference, you know, the web pages of those particular registrars. And, but I think that going beyond that, I think that, you know, if a person is so inclined and industrious that they want to start doing text match searches against all of our registration agreements. I think that's, you know, I don't know if we can guard about that and still have something useful or a useful bit of data to inform this group. So I don't think that's going to that extreme is necessary, but I think just wiping out anything that could be directly linked as an identifier to a registrar would probably be good. I see Jeff's hands up, so I'll drop off there.
Jeff?
I'm kind of just thinking here on this is what's the level of the responses that would be useful to the group? Of course, I'd like it to be as anonymous as possible, so I think part of that would be, you know, what's the data that would be that we could put forward that's anonymous that would be relevant and useful to this group, because we'd want to make it, I wouldn't want to go through this survey and then we come back and we say, hey, it's just too much out, you know, the data is too cleansed or we can't figure anything out versus it's too detailed. But so maybe if I can turn it that way, maybe that will help respond to how anonymous it needs to be.
Marika, did you want to comment? I have a thought, but you go ahead first.
No. Oh, sorry, I still have my hand up.
Ah, okay. what I was thinking, and I'm not sure how much it will dirty the data and make it less useful, is Marika was talking about a sort of a spreadsheet with the four sets of answers. In the extreme, we could randomize the order for each question. And, you know, the first one in question A, 1A may be GoDaddy. The first one in question 1B may be, Enom. That may make it rather difficult to understand, however, because some of the questions are in fact, sequences of things that happen one after the other.
Oh, Alan, hey, sorry, Jeff.
Yes.
So I guess, sorry, maybe I misstated my question. Sort of,
okay.
What I'm saying, not the physical output, but what's the data that you would use, that you would need to, you know, to help to get the answers that we're looking for and to move on, not the actual physical layout, because that can always be played around with.
Well, I'm assuming that in some questions we're going to find uniformity, that is, all the answers are very similar, in which case we have a description of whatever the question was asking about. In other cases, we're going to have a range of answers, which will vary from registrar to registrar. Certainly the questions about what kind of notices do you send, and do you send notices post-expiration, and, you know, some of those, we know there's a variation between registrars, and seeing just what the range of them is may help us in deciding whether we need to formulate policy there or best practices or just leave it alone.
Okay, so, I mean, I think James and the others and everyone else made good, valid points about the level of the data. I don't think we need to mix up the questions, and I think maybe, I don't know about the other register, but I sort of trust Marika on this, saying, hey, here's, like, the basic stuff, like remove our names and links and other things like that, and then to try and, you know, make it as anonymous as possible without deteriorating the actual responses. And I don't know about, I think I could trust Marika and the staff to put that together.
Okay, Marika, do you have marching orders that you're happy with?
Yes, and I would just like to encourage those that are providing feedback, you know, in the answers you provide me with, you know, please indicate if there's something that you wouldn't like to see included, or, you know, just make sure you make reference if there are things that I've already filled in that you say, well, you know, this is not public information or is not correct or whatever. So that as well, you know, I have the feedback from you guys to make sure that I put the information in there, because as I said, I've tried already to do my best to make it, as anonymous as possible, not use the name of the registrar, just refer to registrar or not any, other identifiable information. But if I've missed anything, you know, just please let me know. And I think, you know, I think otherwise, I think I know what I'm supposed to do. So I'm happy to, you know, have a pre-send out to those on the call that provided input just as a last check before it goes out to the mailing list if people would like that.
Yeah, if we can get quick turnaround.
Yeah, and just to confirm, in principle, you know, I'm not going to put anything else in there, what I've already sent you and what you've sent me back. So in that sense, you know, I'm not expecting to make any huge changes because I already did my research and I'm waiting for your input. So in between that, there shouldn't be any drastic changes then from what you've seen.
Okay. I guess from my side, I'd prefer to have the data in hand before I leave for Seoul, and that's a week from tomorrow. Okay, the next item on the agenda is discussion of what we're going to do in the Seoul workshop and update, and a little bit of information on timing. We had at the last meeting said we would schedule it for an hour because there was a half-hour overlap with the AXO meeting. The AXO meeting has since been canceled.
I was going to say, that is now not a problem.
My immediate reaction was to ask Marika if we can extend a half hour, which she said we could because of the lack of AXO meeting, could we extend farther than that and, in fact, have both a public workshop and perhaps a one-hour meeting of the committee? The answer, unfortunately, is a half hour after the end of our scheduled meeting is the registrar-registry separation meeting, which has been scheduled in place of the AXO. And I suspect a large number of the people on this call are going to be interested in that meeting. So it pretty well says we have an hour, either the hour we have currently scheduled or an extra half hour going all the way to 1500. And that's our limitation. My feeling is with only an hour and a half, there's no point in trying to schedule a committee meeting. So the question is, do we leave the public meeting at 1 hour or let it go to the full time zone that's time that's available of an hour and a half? Thoughts? I suspect we have enough to fill the hour and a half, assuming there are people in the room that have that want to speak. If it's just us speaking, an hour is going to be more than enough, I think. James?
Yes, I'm just looking at the schedule quickly here. It looks like that there's subsequent to that, there are a couple of other meetings relative to the new GTLD program. Am I reading that correctly?
I think there's one at 1500 at 3 o'clock. I don't know if there's anything between for the half hour before. I haven't looked at the final schedule itself.
Okay. I would just lobby for keeping it to an hour just so that I don't have to go through the cascading schedule change exercise once again. So, but that's a personal and selfish reason to want that, but I'll just get that out there as well.
Marika, you were going to say something? No?
No, that's his hand up.
No. Okay. No, sorry, I thought I heard your voice. Tim,
oh.
Tim, you're next then.
Yeah, I was just going to echo what James had said. And I know that sometimes, you know, however it runs, it's going to run probably over a little bit, and
mm-hmm.
things just happen that way. So I'd be a little nervous about going to the full hour and a half, because I know for myself, and I'm sure the other registrars on the call, we're not going to want to miss any of the registrar separation.
Nor are some of us.
Yeah, right. I'm sure.
Yes, we may just get up and all move, I think.
Michele?
Pretty much what the other two guys said. Though I would add that I think we should set up a little stand selling popcorn for the registrar separation meeting.
what do we use the proceeds for?
Beer, obviously. Gosh, hello.
Tranquilizers.
We set up a series of funds that will be used for community projects.
Ah, okay.
Beer.
I could make a comment at this point, but I think I'll be nice and not make any. Okay, I think we have unanimity that we stay at 1 hour. Now, what do we do for that hour? I've had some thoughts. Anyone want to go first? Or do you want to listen to me and then shoot me down?
I like that you're shooting you down, Alan. It's fun.
I was going to say, that's always good sport, Alan. Cheryl.
Okay. Marika, you dare to want to speak first.
No.
Sorry. It's been a long day for me already.
But actually, if we're going to keep with 1 hour, then my question would be if we could maybe then do the meeting from 2 to 3 instead of 1:30 to 2:30, as there is a GNSO, CCNSO lunch meeting that's taking place. Although, as the, I don't know, Glenn can weigh in there. I know that there's the CCTLA fast-track meeting starts as well at 1:30, so I don't know if that means that the GNSO, CCNSO meeting will be cut short as well. Otherwise,
if there's a CCTLD fast-track meeting starting at 1:30, the lunch will stop by then.
Okay, so then we don't have an issue.
Yeah, if we move it till from 2 to 3, then we start hitting the barrier that Tim was worried about. That is, we overflow a little bit and overlap with the registrar separation one.
Okay, then we just leave as is.
Okay. Jeff?
So here's my, I guess it's more of a question. Is the idea of the meeting in Seoul, is it to provide an update to the larger community at hand of where the status of where we are, or is it for the people on this call to have like a face-to-face and move forward? Because if we only have 1 hour, we need to choose one or the other. And I guess once we choose that path, then we could sort of set the agenda. But I'm not sure what's the specific goal. I don't know, maybe I can get, you know, we can clarify that.
Well, I think the die is cast in that it is the latter because we have announced it as a public meeting. That's the question I was asking at the beginning of this little discussion of do we want to try to set aside some time for a face-to-face meeting of this working group, and it sounds like there is not enough time in that time slot. And, you know, unless we want to do something for a half hour, but to be quite honest, by the time we get to the room and start, people are going to want to leave for the registrar meeting, I would think.
So you said so will be more of just a public update then to
this
the community?
A public update and to the extent we can, solicitation of information or input.
Okay.
Someone had a hand up but then dropped it. I don't recall who it was, but it's gone.
It was James, and I think Jeff covered it. So.
Okay.
Jeffrey did.
Yeah, I think once we've announced it as a public meeting, it's too late now to go back and make it into a private working group meeting. All right. In the absence of hands, what I was thinking of trying to do was, on the assumption that at least some of the people at that meeting are not going to be well aware of the intricacies of the end of life timeline, and by then, based on what Marika has said regarding the survey, we should have some hard data points as to what's really happening for at least a percentage of registrants. And I would suggest that we start off with a review of the end of life timeline, not just with the picture, but trying to summarize what the RAA and other contractual requirements are on these various issues, on the various data point, or not data points, but the various specific issues that we identified in the survey. And then adding to that what is being experienced in real life based on the survey questions and other moderately hard data points that we have. Does that sound like something realistic to do? Marika?
I was wondering whether something that we could mention or share with the group as well is the public comments received. I mean, of course, not going through them, but just to mention that, you know, some public comments have received touching upon these different issues as a way as well to maybe get the audience to provide input or share their yeses or nos on some of those comments.
I was going to do that as a separate item, but it may well fit into the same
okay.
thing.
Okay. Bye.
One way or another, I think the answer is yes. We want to give some feedback on what we received and how we understood it. Any other thoughts on trying to present essentially a status report of where we are right now? And it's something we don't have at this moment, but we will have by the time we have the survey, the first part of the survey done. And I think it would be useful to understand how the real-life experiences correspond to the various requirements that are within the RAA and the contractual requirements. Input, how we get that done, of course, in the time frame we have is a different question, but if we can get it done, does that sound like a reasonable way to proceed? Marika, your hand is up again or still?
Sorry, still up.
All right. In the absence of any negative comments, I will assume that's a good way to start. I'm not sure to what extent the comments that came in the public comment period can be integrated into another column in that table, but to the extent it could, they should be. I would think, though, that they're probably going to be something that we should deal in a different section and then follow by soliciting comments from the public on the, you know, particularly on the charter questions, but hold it relatively open. Dead silence, no hands. Okay, the next question is, how do we actually get that work done? That is, try to put together a list of the questions we asked in the survey, what is mandated by the contractual requirements, and add to that the summary of what we have seen, not broken out in the four registrars as we were talking earlier in this meeting, but you know, trying to represent the overall picture using a range or a list of the various options that people see depending on the registrar.
This is Marika. I'm happy to have a first go at putting together some slides touching on these different topics.
Okay, and I'm certainly willing to work with you on it.
It might require some working in Seoul, I'm afraid, but
I
hope that's going to be a problem.
When do you arrive there, Marika?
I'll arrive on Thursday.
Okay, I arrive late Thursday night, so Friday is available if we need to do that. I would like to also make sure that a couple of that if possible, all of the registrars, or at least a few of the registrars who have answered, have seen the data before we walk into the Monday meeting to make sure that we're not mischaracterizing the situation. Are we going to have people from the larger registrars there on Saturday?
This is Jeff. I'll be there. I arrive, I think, Friday afternoon.
Okay. James says tick mark, and Paul says a symbol that I've never understood. But
it means that he just stepped away.
Ah,
I know
okay.
That.
Okay, so so that's not confirmation. Okay.
I think Paul is not attending, as far as I know, but I don't know if anyone else from Network Solutions might be able to attend.
I'm sure someone will be attending, whether he'll be there or not. Okay, Sergey had his hand up for a moment, but is gone.
Well, sorry, it was a mistake.
Okay. And Tim had a check mark saying he'll be around.
Right.
Or support the process. All right, so Marika and I
I'm sorry. I'm
go
sorry,
ahead.
Tatiana Kramcova.
Yeah.
I will come to you on Friday night so I can help on Saturday or Sunday, if you wish.
Okay. I think we're going to have to try to get this done on Friday and then just make sure there aren't any big major mistakes in it over the weekend, because both Marika and I are likely to be, if not double booked, fully booked on Saturday, Sunday.
I will support by email.
Okay, and we'll see you on Saturday, so there'll be an opportunity to for you to take a look at it at that point also.
Okay.
Okay, Marika, we've just volunteered for more work. Neither of us is very bright, I think. Okay.
No comment there.
No comment. Hey, you can make negative comments about one another, about the people who do that. All right, next item on our agenda is continuing on the review and the public comments. And my recollection is we got down to somewhere near the end, but not quite. Marika, am I correct in saying that if you have to be discussed in the last column, then to be further discussed, then we did do the overall review in our last meeting. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
I actually had to look back at the transcript for those two, because I don't think we specifically identified for those two issues to which charter question it specifically belongs, but I think we did indicate that those two could be discussed in further detail
okay.
later on.
Do we want to try to do that, to identify where they are? Let's see if we can without too much effort.
I presume the WIPO question or comment is to a certain extent related to some of the other comments that indicated that it's difficult from WHOIS data to assess where a domain stands in its life cycle, whether it has expired or whether it has been renewed by the registry or the registrar, and I guess this relates to it as well, that they can't see whether the registrant has actually requested deletion of a domain name.
And that really comes. I'm trying to find the charter questions, and I haven't found them yet.
It might relate to question four, whether additional measures need to be implemented to indicate that once the domain name enters the auto-renew grace period, it has expired.
And it also is related to, is there adequate notice, in that if you're using WHOIS as the messenger to tell you whether you have to do something or not, then it also relates to that. Is that satisfactory to all? Okay, let's go on to the next one then.
The next one was a suggestion to explore linking duration of auto-renew grace period to duration of the domain name registration.
I guess that if it falls into a question at all, it falls into is there adequate opportunity? Assuming we're talking about lengthening the period for older domains and not shortening it for newer ones, but so I think that comes down to the adequate opportunity. Okay, let's go on to the next one then.
The next comment basically says that the cost of recovery during RGP seems excessive.
Is that within the scope of our PDP? In that our policies cannot limit costs. James?
Yeah, I think it's not clear, and I apologize, Marika, with not having the full comment in front of me, but it's not clear whether they're talking about the cost of the RGP that the registrar charges to the registry versus the price that is paid by that the registrar charges, which I think the latter is certainly not within our remit to discuss And then, of course, any pricing during ARGP is a separate issue, and I would submit that that's also outside of our scope.
Tim?
But it's not clear from this comment which the commenter is talking about.
I believe it was with regard to registrant registrar, but I don't have the original comment in front of me either.
And this is Marika. I have the comment in front of me, and I think the person talks about that because he basically says another big issue is the cost of retrieving after it's past grace. If it's still available, it's often well over $100 per domain, which seems excessive.
Okay, so it's and definitely cost to the registrant.
Yes.
Tim.
Yeah, and just. You know, for whatever it's worth, the RAA actually explicitly says that nothing in the agreement should indicate that ICANN is prescribing anything in regards to the prices that registrars charge or something to that effect. So specifically carved out as a, you know, not a topic for that's being addressed in the RAA. So certainly outside of the so-called picket fence, I would imagine.
Okay, so that's something which could be addressed in RAA amendments, but it is not subject to consensus policy and is probably outside of the scope of this of this PDP.
But I think that's fair. Okay. Kirk, analysis.
Michele?
Look, the thing is, if it is within the scope of the policy office to cover the entire transparency issue in terms of costs and everything else, then if that is addressed, in other words, the registrants are given the information at the time of registration that the costs are all transparent and clear, then I can't remember what that wonderful Latin expression is, then it's, you know, up to them, whoever they choose to go with. If they haven't read all the details and aren't aware of how much they're going to be charged, if they're negligent in their renewal, that's hardly our fault.
You're of course assuming that those details don't change from the time that they registered the domain till the time it expires. But
if you're being transparent, that's moot.
Yeah. I think issues regarding the visibility and the ability to predict what that cost is going to be is an issue within this PDP. Setting the price
is outside.
It's definitely outside of this PDP. So I don't think we need to consider this from the point of view of price setting, and I think we are already on the path to responding to the issue of transparency and predictability.
I mean, I think, Alan, with all due respect, all I would say is that because people will raise the cost issue time and again, the thing is just basically to reply to the comment and say simply that we felt that this was addressed elsewhere. In other words, in terms of the transparency.
Yeah, I don't think we're disagreeing. I'm not trying to wordsmith a response to this comment. I'm just trying to outline what our position is, and our position is. The cost is outside of the domain of this PDP and the RAA, probably. The issues relating to transparency and predictability are within, and that we will be looking at. Next question. Next comment.
The next commenter proposes a number of concrete solutions for the group to consider. First of all, making the AGP and RGP a mandatory registrar service with maximized fees. Secondly, set prohibitions against standard registration agreements that sign away these rights. Thirdly, prescribe SIC whois. Fourthly, registrar whois show all ex-registrant data. And another suggestion is to explore the merger of the AGP and RGP into one expired renewable period.
Try to parse these. Making the AGP and RGP a mandatory registrar service with maximized fees. I do not think, I think the maximized fees aspect comes into what we were describing on the previous comment, and the same answer applies. Making the AGP and RGP, I'm not quite sure what the AGP means for a registration, a registrar service. Does the actual comment go into any specifics?
I'm presuming that he relates, talks about the auto-renewal grace period.
Okay, but that's a defined term only between registry and registrar right now. So he's the implication is that there should be a similar defined period between the registrar registrant. Is that the tone?
I think it is. If I recall well, basically, well, he doesn't actually provide more details.
Okay.
But he, in his previous comments, he just say, you know, registrars are under no obligation to grant auto-renew grace or redemption grace to registrants. So I presume the comment relates to that, that he would like to see that as a mandatory
mandatory
grace period.
So he's looking for a grace period after expiration prior to RGP of some form. Set prohibitions against standard registration agreements that sign away rights to these registrant rights, that really comes into the same general area.
Alan, this is James. I stepped away from my keyboard, but can I get in the queue real quickly?
Sure, right now.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to comment that making auto-renew grace period mandatory declaring how registrars will spend their registry balances and making that part of the ICANN, prescribed method for handling expired names. I just wanted to point out that I'm not entirely comfortable that that's on that ground, that that's within the scope of the group. But I would yield to somebody else if they can maybe shed a little light on that or tell me how I got that wrong.
Well, I wasn't... Ignoring what happens between the registry registrar, I was taking what I think Marika is saying about this comment of the comment is saying that there should be a period of time where the registrant has a grace period with the registrar without looking at the mechanics of it.
Okay, but I mean the only reason that period of time exists is because the registrar has paid for it, essentially. So I think that by saying you must offer this period of time is a way of saying, you know, you must make this expenditure, which to date, if I'm understanding it correctly, a registrar could handle it in such a way that it would be optional.
That may be true, but that also is within the bounds of this PDP if we want to recommend something which is radically different from what is being done right now. So all this comment is saying is that suggesting that there be a grace period in which the registrant is guaranteed they can redeem the name. And I think that is within the mandate of this group. It may be something we don't do, but it's something I think in the mandate. Michele? Is Michele there? Your hand is up. You're not muted.
Sorry. I was muted on my end. Thank you, pardon.
Okay. too many mute buttons.
I think the problem is that from James's perspective is that under the current system, the only way that any of these grace periods can be offered is with the registrar bearing the brunt of the cost. So that has a direct economic impact on the registrar, which would be a problem. If the registry operator were to automatically do something without there being any financial burden on the registrar, then that might be more palatable. But from what I can, from my understanding of what what people are saying. but I think the problem at the moment is that because of the way it's all, the entire system is set up, that it's very awkward to see that unless you make a huge change to the way the registries operate.
Well, I don't think that is outside of the bounds of possibility, number one. Number two, we've already been told that for registries that do not charge the immediately charge the domain back to the registrar, they still typically follow the same process where the domain is retrievable.
But that's this is James. That could be a difference of scale or a couple of orders of magnitude if we're talking about a smaller registrar registry versus the ones that do. Just putting that out there for consideration, that we're talking about possibly tens of thousands per day as opposed to here and there. That could be a much different the level of financial burden, like McKelly was saying.
I'd like to ask a question because I'm a little bit confused.
Can you get in the queue too, please?
Yeah, yes, Tim. Go ahead first.
Well, I was just going to ask a kind of a clarifying question, maybe that as to what we're doing right now. Are you expecting to get into the merits of the comments that were made, or if proposals or suggestions were made, are we discussing the merits of those? We're trying to just look at whether, regardless of the merits, whether or not what they're commenting on is actually related to a question that this group is addressing.
I thought we were doing the latter, not debating whether we should implement it or not. And in that light, I'm a little confused because in the most general sense, I think that part of the comment is saying there should be a period under which registrants can reclaim a name post-expiration. And if it's the belief of this group that that can't happen, then why are we having this PDP at all? I thought that is essentially the substance of this whole PDP. So I'm not quite sure of why all the negative comments. Maybe
I'm that's why I brought it up, Alan. I certainly have views about the merits of what's being suggested, but I think that it is a response to a question the group has been chartered to respond to. So I think it should be categorized that way. And at a future time when we're at that point discussing the merits, so that way we don't get too far off track here today. Just my suggestion.
I support that, but I guess I'd like to understand the comments that we've had, because they really, if that is a formal position, then it really obviates. It says it's not clear what we're going to do here at all if we're starting on the basis that there's no way we can provide a grace period, lowercase g, to registrants. Cheryl, did I hear you trying to get in?
No, you can hear perhaps my thoughts going along with what you said, which I almost said was, and I'm happy to say so now, which of course if we know this now it'll save us all a hell of a lot of time.
Exactly. All right. I think this commenter was really just putting a name, perhaps an inappropriate name, because it's a three-letter acronym that already has a different meaning, but was trying to put a name on the concept that registrants have an opportunity prior to RGP of getting a domain back. And my understanding is that's basically restating why we're here. So I don't see any great objection to that. And I think that comes down under opportunity. McKelly.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think the problem is the terminology being used is causing the barrier, not the concept behind the terminology.
And we can't change what the commenter wrote, but I would suggest we take it as, so to speak, with a grain of salt. And
yeah, exactly.
If it's a different period, we should have the decency of getting a different set of three letters.
Oh, goody.
Alan, this is Tim. I think that we have to accept the fact that some of us on this call, didn't support this PDP. So that's going to be out there, and so, clearly, there's going to be certain views on that. If we didn't start a PDP unless everyone felt that it would, that it should progress, we'd never have a PDP, correct? So I don't think that necessarily means that, we should try to figure this out right now and, end it if that's the feeling. Because clearly others on the call feel completely different. So I think that's what, this is all about, coming to, being able to negotiate with each other, coming to some consensus on something that's palatable and that'll work for everybody. And that's all a part of this process. So I don't think we necessarily need to take the views that have been expressed as saying, let's just stop this today and throw it out the window.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim. Should we try to go on to the next half of this comment, which was rather long to begin with? Set prohibitions against standard registration agreements that allow them, people to sign away their rights. Again, I think that is within the scope of what we are talking about, and in due time we will discuss that. Prescribe thick who is. I don't think I would dare to venture into that market, that area, to be honest. Can anyone comment on why they think this person may have said thick who is going to address this particular problem? Michele had his hand up before I asked the question, so I'll let you go ahead.
I'd just be very wary of going down the rabbit hole of who is. I personally think that who is does need to be addressed, but I think if we start getting into it, we'll miss what we're meant to be dealing with.
I tend to agree, and in this particular case, I'm not convinced that where the who is data resides would stop a registrar from changing it. So. Registrar who is show all registrant data. Explore the merger of AGP and 1G. Okay, so again, we're talking acronyms and the rest of this. So,
Alan, this is Marika.
Yes, Marika, go ahead.
Yeah, no, because I just wanted to clarify. I think maybe the comment on the thick who is a bit out of context there, because I think what the exact sentence says is describe the thick registry who is and registrar who is show all X registrant data up to the death of the domain when it drops. I think I should have explained it a bit clearer there, because I think the comment talks more about that all who is data, the registry or the registrar show the X registrant data.
Okay, so it's really a comma after thick who is, not a semicolon.
Correct.
Okay. And I think that goes into the discussion we already had on should there be new fields in who is or something like that to make it clear exactly what these dates mean. I think that's something that we will in due time get to. So I think this one pretty well maps to opportunity. And in terms of showing data and who is notification. Not hearing any objections. Marika, I assume your hand is up from last time?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Taking it down now.
All right. Well, you can put it back up now, because let's go on to the last point.
There's still three to go.
Oh, sorry. It was the end of my screen.
The next two are both questions or comments from WIPO. Saying that consideration should be given to the implications, if any, for the UDRP. There are different interpretations by registrars of the EDDP that relate to UDRP proceedings, namely 3.7.5.7.
And I won't pretend to know exactly what that is, but I would think that as we go ahead in this process, we will need to make sure that what we do is supportive of the UDRP or identify changes that are needed there.
I just pulled up the article, so just for consistency, I can just read it. And basically say that in the event that a domain which is the subject of a UDRP dispute is deleted or expires during the course of the dispute, the complainant in the UDRP dispute will have the option to renew or restore the name under the same commercial terms as the registrant.
Hey, Alan, it's Jeff. Do you mind if I just jump in? So
yes, please,
we're actually involved in something. This actually occurred. What happens is if somebody, you know, files a UDRP and the domain, you file a UDRP and the domain is going to expire in 1 month, it's up to you as the complainant to renew the domain name or else, you know, so that to keep while the UDRP is in process. So what they're saying and what those laws are saying that the complainant, you, has the same rights as the original registrant or anyone else to renew that domain. So that's what the RAA states. And I think this is more about, I don't know of any registrars or issues that, you know, how this affects this piece because it's something that's in the RAA, so it's more about enforcement. So I'm not sure what this comment is stating for because it's right now it's a provision that we all have to, that we are contractually obligated to comply with.
Okay, so if I understand this, this provision says that post-expiration, either the original registrant or the complainant has the rights to renew. Is that correct? Am I reading this properly?
Yes.
And presumably if the complainant renews and the complaint is settled on behalf of the original registrant, they take it back or something like that.
That's correct, exactly. To put it in simple terms, yes, that's correct.
Okay, so we need to make sure that we don't do anything to harm this provision. But that really comes up towards the end of our process, not at the beginning.
And this is Marika. For those of you that are interested to know more about this issue, they do provide a specific case because they say basically the policy is often a useful tool, although its application to circumstances of expiry or deletion in UDRP proceedings is not always clear. As one example of a recent UDRP decision, which illustrates some of the potential difficulties that can arise in this respect, and they give there a link to a specific case.
Okay. I mean, I'm assuming this is in the UDRP because the complainant wants to make sure that someone else doesn't pick up the domain while the complaint is going on, that if the RAE chooses to let it go, they don't want it to go back into the open market. They're still in a dispute process. I assume that's the original thought behind it. But perhaps what the original thought behind it is doesn't matter. I think this is something we need to think about when we're in the stage of formulating new policy, if we are. But I don't think it specifically comes under any of the five questions.
But this is Rick. I mean, one question I have, but it relates as well, because the WIPO has also submitted some questions in the one of the other PDPs that's ongoing on IRTP. It seems that they have some issues or questions that they would like to see addressed or discussed. So maybe another discussion would need to be had, you know, how they can raise those issues that they see with certain consensus policies at the GNSO level. But I guess it's a different kind of discussion. I'm not necessarily sure.
It is, and I think it's one that comes later in our process in any case.
Okay.
Next one, another WIPO on.
So the next question is related to adequate notice and also relates to whether there's adequate notice under the current policies to timely alert parties in the UDRP proceedings of upcoming expirations and pending deletions. And they're basically requesting if should the working group clarify what, if any, reasonable notice obligations should be.
Well, we are certainly talking about reasonable notice. I guess this is a heads up that maybe we need to consider if there are UDP issues there, and fr- let me ask a question of the registrars. If you're in a UDRP dispute, if a UDRP dispute has been raised with regarding next, sorry, mouth isn't working, a registration that is about to expire, do you provide notice to the complainant as well, or to the or to the people arbitrating, in addition to the original registrant? I'm just asking what current practice
is. This is Jeff. If I can respond on that, is one yes that we do, but also in almost every case where this is, I won't say is an issue where this is where this is a case, the whichever the UDRP filing body is, whoever it is, if it's WIPO or somebody else, they actually send an email as well, stating the fact that the domain is close to expiration and what their obligations are to the complainant to renew the domain. But that's what they do. But as far as us as the registrar, yes, we do send out a notice to them stating what the rules are and what they would need to do and that the domain is close to expiring.
Okay. So should we choose, we could formalize that and make it a requirement, or we can just leave it and under the assumption that due process already handles that issue. Because clearly when a UDRP is filed, one knows what the expiration date is.
Of course, that's part of the filing. And also the other part is, I don't know, you know, if it's worth, part of this is worth digging into is, I think this is, I would say, an edge case. I think we've seen this happen, you know, out of, you know, 10 million plus domains, just, you know, there are, you know, we've seen this happen maybe once every 18 months or so, or 2 years, I think, where a domain has expired and the complainant did not renew or say they didn't know about it. I think actually maybe this is the second time in about 8 years this has happened. So just to give you an idea of the scope of how often this occurs.
So it's something, if we're good, we will remember when we're talking about notification, and we may well discard it at that point. But other than that, it comes under notification, and we don't need to do anything further at this point. James.
Hi, Alan. Just a quick question, procedural question, just because I don't know any better, but it seems like these last two questions really delve into the mechanics of how UDRP operates. And is one of the possible outcomes of this group, besides any type of standalone policy, a recommendation to modify what up until this point has been an unrelated policy? I'm just trying to figure out how this would work if we decided that, yes, we need to include additional notifications or something like that as part of a UDRP sequence. You know, how does that happen?
I'd go to Tim as the wise old man on this. My gut feeling is I don't think there is any restriction as to what we can make policy on if indeed we believe policy must be made. So I would not think that there's any prescription against making a recommendation of a change in UDRP if that comes out of this. I don't think it's going to, but Tim, any thoughts?
Well, I did until you framed me as a wise old man.
The old is in terms of GNSO experience.
No.
I think I win the award in any chronological issue.
You're at least 10 years old.
Yeah. I don't think that would be unusual that for a working group to come back. I mean, and even though we, you know, it's not something we can necessarily recommend as a policy based on what we're working on, but certainly say here's an issue that we raised, something we think needs to be looked at further or something of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly imagine that some change we make invalidates the wording in a UDRP or in some other policy, and there needs to be, you know, corresponding changes made there just to keep it in sync with what we're recommending. And I would hope that would be within our domain. Again, I don't see it happening in this case, but I would think that is all within the scope of recommending policy, that there may be peripheral changes that are necessary just to make everything work together. Not hearing any violent objection, let's go on to the last item.
comments. The last comment related to specific complaints related to the policies of a specific registrar, basically stating that the change of renewal date in WIS caused confusion. The person was not able to transfer the domain during our AGP. The domain name was auctioned before payment to a registrar was confirmed. Then the registrar refused reversal of the third-party transfer. The person claimed that he did not receive notices of changes to the auto-renewal policy, and he also had issues with the fact that there was no opt-out mechanism for the auction process.
I think we can treat this as at least one example of someone said they had problems.
Yeah.
And it falls under the pretty much all of the issues we're looking at, I think, without ticking them off. Certainly falls under notification, opportunity, not having the five issues in front of me, my mind has gone blank. And does anyone who has the five issues in front of them, the five questions, does it fall into more categories than opportunity and notice? Opportunity. Information is clear and conspicuous. Additional measures need to be implemented? I think it addresses that question. I do not believe it addresses whether anything regarding the RGP. So it comes into questions numbers 1, 3, 4, and maybe 2. Okay. The next item on the agenda is continue our discussion of question number 1. I would suggest that first we should look at additional what we're going to be doing for additional meetings, because we need to do that before we complete this meeting. The situation is the next scheduled meeting would be Tuesday, the 3rd of November, where some people might still be in transit, I don't know. And the meeting after that is the 10th of November, where I will not be available. And Marika says she will not be available. Now, Marika can be covered by Margie. No one has volunteered to cover me yet, although I'd be grateful. What is the situation regarding travel and availability for the rest of you for the 3rd and the 10th of November? Michele.
Waiting for the calendar to load, actually, is what I'm doing.
Michele?
I won't be able to make the 3rd.
Okay.
I think I'm stuck somewhere without internet access. And if you need somebody to cover you for the 10th, sure, I can do it if you need.
Okay. The alternative is for both those meetings to try to reschedule them later in the week. Do people want to try to do that, or we stick with those meetings and perhaps have limited participation? One date that strikes me as being possible is I never have any ICANN conference calls on Fridays. Now, maybe that's because nobody wants conference calls on Fridays, or it may be that that's a suitable time we could drop in without a conflict. Any thoughts? You want us to send out a doodle on this?
What, proposing Fridays?
Well, or just a thought. Marika, are you gone for the full 2 weeks, or you just have, or those Tuesdays just happen to be bad?
I'm back on the 11th, but just a note on Fridays. It's typically a bit challenging because, of course, if we do calls that are early in the morning for U.S., they are ready at the end of the day, Friday afternoon for Europeans, which
okay.
is normally not the ideal time to have conference calls, or Friday evening even worse. But, I mean, if everyone's happy with the time, I'm not complaining, but that's just the experience, and I think one of the reasons why there are very few calls are taking place on Friday.
Understand. Cheryl, with regard to your chat comment, you've already damaged your credibility significantly by being willing to have meetings on Saturdays and Sundays and in the middle of the night.
Okay. I didn't say I do it.
Sure. I will.
Good grace.
Michele?
I'm siding with Marika. Friday evenings, probably not the best.
Okay.
If I want to go and visit my beloved family, I'll be in a car somewhere, so not exactly ideal.
Okay, I'm going to suggest we do a doodle on the 3rd and the 10th to see what people's availability is, and if there are a significant number of people for either of those meetings, we will hold a meeting. Michele has volunteered to chair the one on the 10th, if there is one held, but we will not try to change days and times at this point. Everyone agreeable on that? If you are, I then have one minor caveat. By the 3rd, we will on both sides of the Atlantic. In any case, we will be back on standard time instead of daylight saving time. And I would suggest that we keep the local time of this meeting the same, and thus increase the UTC time by 1 hour. Is that reasonable for everyone? Or is there anyone who thinks that is not a good idea? The only people it affects is Cheryl, I'm guessing, because you don't change times at the same time.
But we have and we do.
On the same dates?
No, I'm already in daylight savings. Since last week.
Okay. This would make it 1 hour later for you, which I presume is better, not worse.
Without changing the UTC time, it's become a nice time for me. With changing the UTC time, it's certainly doable, but it is also a time where I tend to have a lot of other local meetings. But that's okay. We can work with it.
Okay. And I think for everyone else, it keeps the time the same, and that has worked until now. And I suspect by changing it for an hour, it will impact some people. And I think it will. Marika, it makes it right in the middle of dinner time in Europe. Is that correct?
Yes, right in the middle of some kids to bed and things like that.
I guess dinner time depends on your personal standards, but at an inconvenient time in the between afternoon and evening.
Correct.
All right. Then unless I hear any objection on the mailing list, I would suggest that we keep the local time the same for Europe and North America in any case, and increase the UTC by 1 hour. Michele?
You're confusing me, Alan. I'm completely confused because I'm basically on UTC most of the time. So I'm trying to understand what you're actually changing.
Have you had daylight saving for the last couple of months?
Yes.
Okay. And that will change. So your time in relation to UTC time changes at the end of October.
Yes.
So I'm saying that we change the UTC time and therefore keep your local time the same.
If you change the UTC time, you're going to change my local time.
No, you said you were on daylight saving and you will not be by then.
Yeah, I'll be on UTC again.
Right.
Well, okay, as James says, UTC is not equal to GMT. Oh, God, I had this argument with somebody before. Oh, look, I'll wait till you send something around.
Then I'll argue
about it.
Whatever time you started this meeting today, and I've lost track, it would have been 2:30, 8:30 in the evening?
7:30 in the evening.
7:30 in the evening. We're suggesting that it still be 7:30 in the evening for you.
Okay, so, all right. Okay.
which I think means we have to change the UTC time to do that.
If you say
so. I think we ask Gisela to sort this out and get back to us.
Okay.
Great. Can I wave my I'm an arts graduate flag here, please?
Sorry, you were muffled. I couldn't hear what you said.
I think I need to wave my I'm an arts graduate flag here because you're in my head.
Touché.
Excuse me.
All right. So we will send out, we will tentatively hold meetings on the 3rd and the 10th, pending a lot of people canceling. I will not be here on the 10th. Michaeli will chair. We will definitely hold a meeting on the 17th. And to the extent possible, we will talk to each other in the hallways in Seoul. I think that is all we need to talk about the future meetings. And we have 9 minutes left, and I don't know about the rest of your state of mind. Mine is that I suggest we terminate early today, because I don't think we're going to accomplish an awful lot going back to question number one at this point. I don't think the time will be very productively used, so I recommend we give it back to ourselves. Cheryl says she agrees. The rest of you are silent, and no outcry means you all agree. Tim says he agrees. We've taken enough time. I thank you all. I'll see those of you who are in Seoul. There is no meeting next week. And thank you for all for your hard work. And Cheryl, I'll call you in about 5 minutes.
I won't even take my headset off. Just dial away.
Okay, I'll call you right away then.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye, Al.
Thank you, Al.
Bye.